This is Guildcast, episode 25 for April 22nd, 2006. Hey everyone, welcome back to Guildcast. I'm your host Sean, and in this episode I'll discuss something that I find very interesting and entertaining, and that's video capture in Guild Wars. This is everything from small instructional videos that people make on farming or running, to synced music videos, and anything else that people feel that they need to document by video capture. Now if you subscribe to Guildcast on a program such as iTunes, you may have noticed that this show has a supplemental video that you can download also. That is, if I did it correctly. This is my first attempt at adding videos along with the regular podcast, but I hope to be able to add more regularly in the future. If you aren't able to get the video in your regular podcast feed, I will also have a link up to it in the show notes. It's pretty much my little creation for you to laugh with me and at me. And then there's the second video that was created by Amber Red, who's also known as Hikari Link on the forum. And actually, he wants me to just call him Link from now on, since Amber Red is his female character's name. I think he did a great job on this one, and I hope you all enjoyed as much as I did. This is his first music video also, but I'm pretty sure he's planning on making more with future episodes. As of right now, while I'm recording this, I'm not sure if I'll be able to get it into the feed also. So if I can't, I'll put it up and then put a link to it on the show notes. Also in this episode, I'm going to be reading an interview I did with Zach, also known as True Edge. To me, Zach is the George Lucas or Steven Spielberg of Guild Wars movie making. He has a page on GameAmp where he's an admin, and it focuses on all of his movies, complete with a forum where people ask him questions or generally just give him praise on how awesome he is. I'll also put a link up to that on today's show notes. And I would say that Zach's videos are probably the one thing that got me into admiring these captured music videos, and also realizing that there's a huge difference between just capturing video and making entertaining music videos. He obviously puts a ton of time in his videos, and it shows. Now, this interview was originally planned as an audio interview, which would have been a lot better considering this is an audio show, but we had several problems. First off, our time zones are drastically different. With me being in the Eastern time zone and he being in the Hawaiian time zone, we're 6 zones apart. Plus, our schedules are both pretty busy, and he has no computer mic, and I'm not even really sure if my cell phone plan includes Hawaii anyway. But what I did instead was I sent him my questions in an email, and he responded, so I'll be reading those instead. But to me, it's not really a big deal. You know, I was just happy to have him answer my questions and to agree to the interview for the show in the first place. Also, I got a voicemail on Skype this week, which is my first Skype voicemail, and it brings to light a very important issue that I'm sure we're all very concerned about.
Hey, Sean, it's Loudon. I just had to call in because I've been hearing some really nasty rumors that Lady Sinea is not being compensated for her contributions to Guildcast. I'd really appreciate it if you could speak to this in the next show. I just can't believe that something like that would be true. If it is, I don't see myself being able to continue as a loyal Guildcast follower. So if you could speak to this in the next show, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks, man, and keep up the good work.
Well, Loudon, I understand your concern. Lady Sinea does an excellent job on Guildcast, and that doesn't go unrecognized. When I first brought her aboard, I enticed her with promises of fetid carapaces and Grawl necklaces, as far as the eye could see. But I may just have to up the ante a little bit to ornate Grawl necklaces, and maybe even, if she does a good enough job, stone summit badges. Yep, one day. Thanks, Loudon, for that call. So anyway, on to the interview with Zach. For the first question, I asked him, "First off, let me say that I'm a huge fan of your videos. I've been watching them since the days before GameAmp gave you your own section called Zach's Videos. Now your videos are all over the net, including places like YouTube.com, with thousands and thousands of viewers. Does the thought of this ever overwhelm you?" "Oh yeah, it's crazy," he says. "I didn't even know YouTube existed until one day I Googled myself and found out that others have been spreading my videos everywhere without me knowing. Just the other day I walked into my local CompUSA store and found out that they had dedicated a section in their PC area to my videos, playing them on rotation on a huge screen. It's an awesome feeling, really. Can you tell me a little bit more about the software you use to capture and edit your movies? When I first started, I was using the unregistered version of Fraps, limiting me to 30 seconds of continuous capture time, and it had the www.fraps.com watermark at the top of the screen. It irritated me so much that I decided to buy the full version for my third video. To edit the movies, I've used Windows Movie Maker and just recently started using Sony Vegas. How long does it take, usually, for you to make one of your movies, on average? It really depends on how well it's planned out. I've scrapped so many videos that were 75% done just because I wasn't feeling it. If I have a video planned out, I know what I need to film and how I need to edit it. Taking into account all the scrapped ideas and my life, about a month to 2 months. Now, you started a guild named True Cinema, which focuses on movie making in the game. Tell me a little bit more about your goals with this guild. It started out as a way to keep track of those who wanted to be in my movies, but it's grown so much since then. Members began making movies as well, and other aspiring movie makers wanted to join up with us as we became more and more popular. Nowadays, we're doing some filming, but focusing on creating a stronger PvP backbone while we wait for factions to come out. I passed the leadership to a friend, Excelsius Mortem, and he does a great job of keeping the guild together and solving problems. If someone wants to be in one of your movies, what should they do? That's the toughest question yet. At first, I had people email me their in-game names, and I'd add them in-game, then message them when I needed them for filming. That worked until my second video was released, because my friends list filled up. I was still getting loads of emails, about 20 a day, so I began writing down their names and trying to keep track of them that way. I filled up a few papers until I realized that wouldn't work. Then True Cinema was born, and people would join the guild to be in the movies. That worked great for a while, until it started affecting the quality of our guild by just letting anyone in. Nowadays, if you want to be in one of my videos, it's a little bit more difficult if you aren't already in True Cinema. But you can watch my forums on GameAmp or TrueCinema.us for my scheduled filming times, then just message me in-game around that time. I think I've seen all or at least most of your movies now, and I'd have to say Simply in Fuego is probably my favorite, although there's certainly none that I hate. But do you have a favorite? My favorite, hands down, would be Guild Wars Rhapsody, done to the song Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. Until then, I felt I was going mainstream with my videos, picking songs I know everyone would get a laugh at. Rhapsody was the first sort of artsy video I did, and I got a big variety of feedback on it. The younger generation didn't get it at all, telling me I lost my touch, while the older generation praised me greatly. I received long letters telling me I was now a true artist, and to pursue film as a career. Just a big range of feedback. It was crazy. I think Bohemian Rhapsody is the greatest song ever created, and making a video to it was a joy to me. Do you plan on pursuing filmmaking as a career? Definitely. I've been into filmmaking since 8th grade, and I've taken classes throughout high school. I'm at the University of Hawaii in queue to get into their film school. It's relatively new and nowhere near the quality of a more developed film school on the mainland, but I figured I'd try it out while I'm down here, finishing up my general education requirements. If I fully pursue it, I'll probably have to move to California, where the big film industry is, but I'm still deciding because it's hard to leave my beautiful island. Do you have any advice for other future video capture movie makers out there? Shift-Control-H. I'd say have fun making videos. Don't try to impress anybody but yourself. If you get negative feedback, don't take it harshly. Just keep making more. You'll find that you learn a lot by experience. Find people that enjoy making movies as well. They'll often help you out while filming because they know what it's like. I imagine with the factions preview weekend, you've already got some ideas flying around through your head for some new movies with all the new backdrops, characters, armor, etc. Any hints as to what you might be planning for your next video? Plenty of ideas. Too many. I lie in bed with my eyes wide open because I start thinking of what I could do. Hints? I'm planning on something pretty big. Not giving out any real hints, but it won't be just another music video syncing emotes to the music. You'll see. So that was it. I'd like to thank Zach for answering those questions, and I wish him luck with his potential filmmaking career. If you want to check his videos out, you can go to guildwars.net gameamp.com, and on the left-hand column there's a link called Zach's Videos. Also, as I mentioned, his videos are on youtube.com, that's youtube.com, and all over the internet, in fact. And what you can do is you can go on youtube.com and do a general search for Guild Wars, and you'll find a ton of videos that other people have made too, including some nice ones showing people farming and running. Also on guildwars.gameamp.com, they have another video section too with pages and pages of videos by other people, although in my opinion, none as good as Zach's. You can also check out his guild's website at www.truecinema.us, that's TrueCinema.us. They have a message board with a wealth of information regarding movie making in the game. And it's not just all about Guild Wars either. In fact, his latest video, number 6, has both Guild Wars and World of Warcraft in it. So in that interview, Zach mentions Fraps, which is one of the most popular and useful video capture programs out there. It's spelled F-R-A-P-S, and it's at www.fraps.com. It works for so many games other than just Guild Wars. It'll basically work for anything that uses DirectX or OpenGL technology. It can capture up to a resolution of 1152 by 864 at 100 frames per second. It also has a screenshot capture feature that will capture anything you have on the screen. They have a free version that you can download from their website, and then they have a paid version for $37 that offers that high resolution that I mentioned before. It also offers unlimited record time versus the 30-second time limit in the free version, and it also takes out the web URL watermark that's on the top of the screen in the free version. Another good program is one called Taxi, that's T-A-K-S-I, at taxi.sourceforge.net. That's taksi.sourceforge.net. This is basically an open source free alternative to Fraps. It's a fairly good program, not as good as Fraps of course, but it's free. Plus it hasn't had an update in over a year and a half, which makes me kind of wonder if it's either so bug free that it doesn't need an update, or if it's just being neglected.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. There's been tell of a couple new developments in the wind, and I'm not going to go over all of them, but I will mention one that's actually been posted as official news on the GuildWars.com website. For those who feel that 4 characters just isn't enough, soon you'll be able to buy new slots for a small fee. I have mixed feelings about this. First, I'm happy that the people have been listened to, because their main account complaint usually has been that there aren't enough character slots. This new development is really good for newer players and those who have been thinking about buying another account just for more slots. But what about the rest of us who just went ahead and already bought our second accounts? Not a whole lot of details about this have been released yet, but from what I understand, there's very little chance at this time that we'll be able to merge 2 Prophecies accounts together. This really does not please me at all. Why should newer accounts get the benefit of having all of their storage and faction and unlocks combined on one account, while mine is stuck being all split up between my 2 accounts? Further, those players are only going to have to buy 1 copy of factions and any future chapter releases, whereas I would have to buy 2 copies of each if I wanted the same access. The thing is, I've heard a lot of people complain that there aren't enough character slots, and then when Gale kept hinting like a month or two ago about how many new slots you'd be getting in factions, I predicted it right when I said, I bet it's only going to be 2, because 6 slots is enough to create an assassin and a ritualist, but it's not enough to make 1 of each of all of the 8 professions. So I heard the complaints, but I've always been one to stand up for ArenaNet and say, hey, they do a heck of a lot to keep this game running, and it's free to play. One way that they can make money is to encourage you to buy a second account. And I have to say, I've had hundreds of hours of enjoyable gameplay, and happily have only had to pay twice for this game. No monthly fees is a huge plus in my book, so I've had no qualms at all with supporting ArenaNet in the purchase of my second account. However, now that we've got this new development, it's upsetting to me because I'm not really interested in transferring everything over and remaking my two additional characters onto my primary account. For one thing, it'd be a huge time investment because one of the characters is finished with the game and the other is well into the Fire Islands. And then there's also a lot of unlocks that I have on my second account, as well as faction that I earned during the two preview weekends. Those things, even if I did transfer all of the money and materials and everything, those things are intangible, and the way that the game is set up right now, they can't be transferred from one account to the next. Further, it would just tick me off to no end if I were to have to buy two copies of factions, whereas someone else with the same number of character slots as me, but instead all added onto one account, would only have to buy one copy of factions. So, what I'm asking is, are the longtime Guild Wars fans and supporters going to be penalized like this? I've always supported all of the decisions that ArenaNet has made because I think they put a huge amount of thought and effort into making this game great and in keeping it both balanced and interesting. I purchased a second account so I could play more, and I also know that I was financially supporting the game. One thing that I heard that a reason for why we might not be able to link two Prophecies accounts together was because there's a risk of someone stealing your account. I don't really understand this, and I'll explain why. If someone somehow steals your Guild Wars password, they can access your account. They can steal your items, your gold, mess up your guild, delete your characters, and do all kinds of things like that. However, they can't actually permanently steal your account. At least, that's how it used to be. I noticed that the new login screen doesn't have that old forgot your password link, and that link is gone now. But I'm assuming that there must be some way to still retrieve your password, maybe through PlayNC or something. But you should be able to still get your password back so long as the thief doesn't have access to your email. But even if there isn't, and someone's already stolen your account, well, then that was just your fault already. But there are some good systems in place right now. Like, if you want to change the email address that's linked to your account, ArenaNet will send a confirmation email to both your current email address and to your new one that you want to change it to. You can only do this if you confirm both of these through the emails, and then your Guild Wars account will change. I think this is a really good system, and I don't see why this couldn't work for linking accounts. In fact, I just thought of this. How about, in order to deter people from just linking accounts to steal from other players, ArenaNet attaches an actual fee if a player wants to do this? If they were to make a special access key that was for the sole purpose of just joining two accounts together, I would buy it. I'd pay maybe $20 USD. I think that'd be a fair price. And even if it were more, I'd probably still buy it, just so long as it's only a one-time fee. Then you could use this special access key and have to enter it in on both of your accounts. And then you would have to also do email confirmations on both accounts' respective email addresses in order to make it go through. That's a lot of steps involved, and it sounds pretty secure to me. So, I don't know, what do you think? I'd pay for this if ArenaNet made it possible. Okay, that's the end of my rant for today. I'll just have to wait and see how things play out. This episode of Guildcast is about video recording, which I know very little about, except to say that I love Zach's videos, and I've been meaning to send one of them to a friend of mine who plays World of Warcraft, send him that video of the dance face-off between Guild Wars and WoW. I'll have to email it to him and then ask him what he thought of it the next time I see him. Me, I've never really been great at graphic arts, even though I do know how to use some of the programs themselves, but I've always been much better at painting pictures with words rather than actually drawing them out. That said, I put up a new installment of my ongoing stories about my characters, and I also took some screenshots of them to sort of go along with the story. I posted this new chapter up on my blog, which you can find at myspace.com/LadySinea. And I've also got a couple of projects and stuff on the burners right now, and I'll let you know if anything comes of them. One thing I've been working on is a Guild Wars song, and it's mostly done, but it sounds kind of cheesy a cappella. and I can pick a few chords out on my guitar, but nothing of any significance to make a decent-sounding song. So, if there are any serious musicians out there in the audience, and you'd like to help me write this song, let me know. You can email me, and maybe send me a clip of some music that you've written, and you can reach me at ladysinea@gmail.com. Sinea is spelled S-I-N-A-E-A. I'll let you know if anything else interesting happens. Sometimes we post related news and other interesting happenings, like other podcasts that have mentioned Guildcast before and things like that, on our message boards, and we don't necessarily mention them here on the show. So it's worth a look to go check out our forums, even if you don't visit often. So, until next time, this has been Lady Sinea bringing you The Word on the Street.
For this Skills and Builds segment, I'm going to veer away from the video topic for a bit and talk about the elementalist skills Meteor and Meteor Shower, and I'll also explain what exhaustion is a bit, which both of these skills cause. I believe this is the first time I've talked about an Ellie skill in my Skills and Builds segment, and as a heads up, I plan on dedicating one show per profession very soon, so I can talk more about what each class is useful for besides just these Skills and Builds segments. So Meteor and Meteor Shower are elementalist skills that both use the fire magic attribute, the only real aesthetic difference between them being that one is a single meteor while the other is a whole shower of them. And of course the shower uses more energy. With Meteor, target foe and all adjacent foes are struck for 7 to 91 fire damage and knocked down. This spell causes exhaustion. And I'll explain exhaustion a little bit in greater detail in just a minute. It uses 5 energy, has an activation time of 3 seconds, and a recharge time of 30 seconds. It can be obtained from the quest Blood and Smoke out of Etten's Back, and can be purchased from Teng Sao in the Amnoon Oasis and Dak in Ember Light Camp. It can also be capped from Vrek Quek Spek in Dragon's Gullet. With Meteor Shower, the caster can create a meteor shower at target foe's location. For 9 seconds, foes adjacent to that location are struck for 7 to 91 fire damage, and knocked down every 3 seconds. This spell also causes exhaustion. The energy cost on this is 25, activation time is 5 seconds, and the recharge time is 60 seconds. It can be purchased from Captain Greywind at the Ascalon Settlement in North Krita Province, Master Scout Kiera in Hendriv Denravi, and Dak in Emberlight Camp. Meteor Shower is used mainly for giant groups of hard enemies, while Meteor is more for the smaller groups that just need to be knocked down or interrupted, while the other party members can get, you know, a few more hits in on them. These are both great skills for all the things that they can do, the knockdown, the interrupt, the high damage, but they come at a huge cost, especially Meteor Shower. But there are ways around this. You can use Glyph of Energy to nullify exhaustion and reduce the spell's energy cost by 20. You can also use Glyph of Renewal to eliminate the 60-second recharge time. And for some real crazy firepower, you can have your secondary class as Mesmer for the spell Arcane Echo, and you can cast this spell twice without waiting for the recharge time. This is known as Echo Nuking, and it's a really popular build. Also consider using Glyph of Sacrifice on the Echoed Shower. It will not take an extra 30 seconds to recharge, since Arcane Echo will change back to its regular state after 20 seconds. Also, something very important to take into consideration. Because the spell has such long intervals between damage ticks, it doesn't cause creatures to flee, as most area of effect skills do, like the now useless Firestorm. This makes it very useful against grouped, non-moving opponents, such as archers. Since both of these spells cause exhaustion to your caster, I'll explain what that is exactly, because it's very important to keep in check. While exhausted, a character's maximum energy supply is reduced. Whenever a spell causing exhaustion is cast, the caster loses 10 maximum energy. The amount of maximum energy lost is shown at the right end of the energy bar as grayed out. Maximum energy lost to exhaustion will be restored at a rate of 1 point every 3 seconds. Changing zones will also remove all exhaustion. Exhaustion does stack. So if a character casts several spells that cause exhaustion in succession, his maximum energy supply will become severely reduced. Exhaustion can actually cause maximum energy to drop below zero. In this case, the deficit must be regained at 1 point per 3 seconds before actually regaining maximum energy. The effect of exhaustion is triggered when an exhaustion-causing spell begins casting, not once the spell has been successfully cast. So canceling casting or being interrupted will not prevent exhaustion. So far, there are currently 13 spells that cause exhaustion. They are Aether Prodigy, Chain Lightning, Lightning Surge, Gale, Mind Shock, Shock, Earthquake, Obsidian Flame, Meteor Shower, Mind Burn, Meteor, Maelstrom, and Mind Freeze. These are all elementalist spells, but there are also other ways that your character can become exhausted. The Assassin has a skill called Exhausting Failure that, if it successfully interrupts a spell, will cause exhaustion to the victim. Also in the Dragon's Lair, at the end of the mission, when you're up against Glint, she'll cast Crystal Haze, which causes exhaustion when the hexed character uses a skill that costs energy. The only way to really prevent exhaustion when casting is to cast the elite spell Glyph of Energy first, which you can cap from the Avacara boss, Heil Thunderwing, in Mineral Springs. If I've learned one thing from this episode, it's that trying to record early is usually a bad idea. I recorded parts of the show about 4 days ago to save some time, but there's been so much big news in the last 2 days that I'm adding on to the end of this a little bit instead of re-recording the whole thing. The biggest news being the brand new announcement by ArenaNet concerning adding titles to your characters' names. This is exactly what I imagined they were talking about with the new PvE reward system that Gale has discussed several times. I'll read a bit about it from a recent GameSpot interview with ArenaNet's James Finney and Eric Flanham. Titles are intended to give players recognition for extraordinary achievements. Some titles are associated with a player's account, such as Champion, which recognizes your achievements in guild versus guild combat. Some titles are associated with individual characters, such as Tyrian Explorer, which recognizes your persistence and ingenuity in visiting every possible nook and cranny in the continent of Tyria. For example, the first level of Skill Hunter requires that you capture 90 elite skills with a single character. You become an Adept Skill Hunter when you reach a total of 135 elite skills. Capturing that many skills is an incredible accomplishment. You can choose only one title to display at a time, but a single character can have multiple titles. Whenever you uncover a new part of the world map of Tyria, for example, you make progress toward a Tyrian Explorer title. This does not diminish or alter any progress you've made toward a Gladiator title, which is earned through victories in random arenas. Right now, there are no unique titles, but this is something we will consider as we move forward. We definitely think it's great for players to have a chance to become famous within the Guild Wars community. And then they had a little bit more to say about the Alliance battles also. The basics of the new Persistent War mode system work like this. Guild Alliances declare their allegiance to either the Kurzic or Luxan nations, and alliances on each side are ranked according to how many faction points members of that alliance have cashed in. Faction points can be gained in many different ways, from completing quests and missions to engaging in PvP combat. Depending on how high an alliance is ranked within its faction, it will control a different piece of territory. Working in tandem with this system is a new special type of PvP combat called Alliance Battles. Alliance Battles will determine exactly how much territory is available for each side to control. We designed the system to cater to as many different playstyles as possible. Players who enjoy questing are capable of earning faction points at a rate similar to players who enjoy PvP combat. In this way, we hope that alliances will often be formed between guilds that enjoy different styles of play to maximize and diversify the ways in which they gain faction points. We added guild scrimmages, which can be initiated by any member of the guild when they are in their guild hall. This gives guilds the ability to practice 1-on-1, 8-on-8, or even 1-on-8 combat if they choose. This is also a pretty good example of the sort of upgrades that affect all chapters of the game. Anyone playing Guild Wars whose guild has a guild hall will be able to take advantage of guild scrimmages regardless of whether they buy factions. In order to play the other new mission types, players will need to own factions. Multi-team cooperative missions are very story-driven and provide players with an opportunity to coordinate with other teams of 8 players to accomplish a goal, such as defeating a particularly nasty dragon. Challenge missions are designed to be repeatable. You can think of them as sort of arcade games, where there really isn't an end to them, but you are trying to achieve the highest score possible. For example, one of the missions has you trying to exterminate as many monsters as possible within a time limit. Players will be able to compete with each other to see who can get the best daily, monthly, and all-time scores. Now, with this news, the part that really, well, besides the titles, I think that's really exciting, but the part that sticks out to me as far as Guildcast is concerned is the opportunity to have one-on-one or even one-on-8 combat, because that will make some pretty interesting contests, I think. So look forward to me utilizing that a little bit more in the future, if it's made the way I imagine it is. Well, that'll do it for this episode. I hope this show can possibly inspire some budding young movie makers to go out and try their hand at some video capture, or at least simply provide some entertainment for you to watch. Don't forget to check out Zach's videos on GameAmp or YouTube.com, and check out his guild's website at www.truecinema.us. Also, don't forget about the trivia contest tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern in Ice Tooth Cave, International District 1. So until next time, tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.